Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Film Haven Reviews. I'm your host Sawyer, as always, and today we are starting a whole new theme. And I've been working on this theme, right? So last week I kind of didn't really know what to call it. 90s Fedora Man movies is a little, I'm not sure, silly. But I've been thinking about these movies, and I think what it really is maybe 90s noir nostalgia. Because you have these fedoras and trench coats and this kind of seedy, darker movies. Maybe not, like, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen Dick Tracy yet, but it seems like that movie isn't, like, super dark, but it is very, like, 30s. Very much, like, almost Art Deco. So it's like a maybe Art Deco nostalgia. I'm having a hard time. There's definitely a theme here with the design and the way that the movies look. But as far as what that means, I'm still working on it. But I think 90s noir nostalgia is a good way to put it. However, I think the movie that we're talking about today is probably maybe the biggest exception within that. So I'm already going against what I just said. But today we're talking about Darkman from 1990. And while the movie does have the fedora, it definitely has some nostalgia in it. It's got the fedora, the trench coat, and it also has this old kind of like fighting against mobsters. So it's a little bit like, you know, there's a little bit. It's not like super overt, but it is there. It feels like a throwback. It feels like they're trying to reclaim an old style. There's a lot of camp in it. It's very campy in a way, like overacting, over melodramatic. And these are all, you know, hallmarks of that 30s, 40s era, especially even like the old mobster movies, the old gangster movies, stuff like that. But there's also a big influence from Batman. I mean, there's just no way around it. When you watch this movie, and I couldn't help it, immediately I was feeling Batman because the score was like, okay, this is bad. This is just the Batman score, but done in a different way. And then, of course, I saw in the opening credits that Danny Elfman did was the composer for the movie. So there you go. That makes sense. Danny Elfman, of course, doing a lot of early Tim Burton movies, including the Batman films and some of the most iconic original scores of all time. Like, I'm not going to pretend like I know a bunch of music composers for movies, but I mean, when I think of the best of the best, I think of, you know, John Williams, of course, and then you think of Hans Zimmer, and then right there in that trio is Danny Elfman to me. But maybe that's just because I grew up in the 90s. Anyway, so this movie, also directed by Sam Raimi, which is a very big director for me. I haven't seen this one. I've seen most of Sam Raimi's movies. I think there's really only a couple that I've missed. There's a baseball movie that he did that I still haven't seen. But, you know, you got Evil Dead, that whole series, and Army of Darkness. And then, of course, you have The Quick and the Dead. And then you've got the Spider-Man trilogy, Drive Me to Hell. And then now he recently did the second Doctor Strange movie. So he's got a long list of pretty iconic movies and some good stuff. I mean, Spider-Man 1 and 2, but Spider-Man 2 in particular, as a kid, was one of my favorite movies of all time. Definitely saw that multiple times in the theater. And when you're 10 years old, it's really hard to see a movie multiple times because that means you have to convince your parents to let you go to the movies twice to see a movie. But that's how much I love Spider-Man 2. So Sam Raimi's always kind of been a presence in my life and a fond one too, because I remember like out of high school and being in film school, watching some more niche movies. And of course, Evil Dead is not super niche. It's very much a cult classic to the point where it's like one of the most famous cult classic movies. It's like saying like, oh, I've seen Pulp Fiction, but it is a little bit more low budget than Pulp Fiction. And being in film school and discovering Evil Dead was really important for me because horror in general many times is done by very independent directors and low budget directors and people who are really trying to make a lot out of a very little. And the more I did stuff in film school, the more I realized all the tricks that you can use. And I started seeing it in other low budget movies. And so looking up all the like notes and all the trivia on Evil Dead 1 in particular, I mean, they went to a location that was literally, I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure it was like Sam Raimi's like uncle or something. They had an old dilapidated cabin in Tennessee. And it's very much like kind of the movie where like the cabin itself was also dilapidated, not just because they made it that way in the set, like with the set design. And also the actors in the movie, including his buddy Bruce Campbell, who, of course, is now very iconic for being Ash from the Evil Dead movies and then the series as well, all the video games. I mean, Evil Dead is, like, huge now. But Bruce Campbell and all those other people in the movie weren't real actors. They were just friends. They're basically doing Sam Raimi a favor. And so how they did so much with so little was so interesting to me. I don't think Evil Dead 1 is, like, particularly an incredible movie. It did do some interesting things, and for the time, it was I think it was pretty cool. It started a whole lot of things, but I think it's telling that in Evil Dead 2, he kind of took... It's not a direct sequel to Evil Dead 1. It's more of a redo of Evil Dead 1 and a repackaging into Evil Dead 2, which is telling at the quality of the first movie. But anyway... The story of how they popularized the movie as well is just as interesting, how it basically, like, went viral in, like, the early 90s version of that, where basically it got passed around, like, the physical copy of the movie. I don't even know if VHSs were around back then, but it was, like, the reel of the movie was sent around to different places, and it was sent, you know, it was shown at small festivals, but it was also just, like, you know, people who are into really small independent movies and horror movies and would just pass it around to different places, and, like, kind of word of mouth went viral. And that's how he got enough of a budget to make the second movie, which is really interesting, too, because, I mean, the first movie is straight up, he was a film student at the time. So that, I think that was also, like I said, inspiring to me. Sam Raimi really is one of those film directors who started from the bottom and really tried to make something from his very early days when he was very young, and was able to create his own signature style. And that has been true throughout all of his movies. I mean, he is really diverse. If you think about it, he's made baseball movies, he's made westerns, he's made horror movies. He has made, he was kind of, in some ways, the creator of the modern comic book movie. I mean, Spider-Man 1 and 2, in a way, is like the template or the early forerunners for the later Marvel movies and even the DC movies and stuff like that, everything that came out. I mean, he really is a pathfinder in a lot of ways. That being said, I didn't really like Darkman that much. I mean, I didn't hate it. It was enjoyable, but I was disappointed. I'm going to be very honest. I was disappointed. I think it was very reminiscent of Batman. And since just a year earlier, Tim Burton's Batman came out in 1989, you could definitely see the influence of that movie. I think it was interesting. I think that the story itself was pretty bland and run-of-the-mill, and there was a bit of a, like, there was a couple of things here and there that kind of made it, elevated it a little bit. Right out of the gate, I'm just going to give you an idea, like, just through my rating, so that way you have an idea of what I'm talking about. I'm going to probably give it, like, a 6.5, which is not horrible, and because there is a lot of things to enjoy about the movie, but I just felt like it just didn't do enough in a lot of ways. And maybe that's me being watching this movie from in 2024 after we've had all these comic book movies and all these origin story movies, and also being a lover of the 1989 and 1992 Batman movies. I'm not gatekeeping or anything, but I think I just have such a fondness for those movies that it's hard to I'm maybe comparing too much the two movies, just because the Danny Elfman score and the general vibe of the, like, revenge plot, the vengeance, you know, Batman is vengeance incarnate, and he's kind of, Darkman's kind of playing the same role. And so there's just a lot of, it's kind of hard not to compare the two. But let's actually get into the synopsis, seeing as it's almost 9 minutes into the episode and I've spent more time talking about Evil Dead than I have about this movie. The plot is pretty simple. There is a bad gangster guy that's out there, and he's in cahoots with this big business guy, business mogul who's trying to completely redefine LA and change the downtown area. And so in doing so, he's kind of he's bribing people, and he's got the police in his pocket, all that kind of stuff. So there's all this criminal organization stuff going on in the background. Meanwhile, you have Liam Neeson, who's a scientist who works specifically. He's kind of trying to recreate skin cells and get them to where you can basically regraft skin onto people. And instead of grafting it from skin that they already have, you can actually produce the skin, basically manufacture skin. So you can give people new hands and new faces and stuff if they're burn victims, all that kind of stuff. So he's, like, hard at work being a scientist, and I will say for what happens later, it's very convenient that he is this type of scientist, of course. But what ends up happening is his girlfriend, who's played by Frances McDormand, by the way, which is really crazy, a very young Frances McDormand, which, you know, nowadays we're used to seeing her as basically being like this, you know, powerhouse actress who totally dominates the screen every time she's on it. And in this movie, she plays basically the damsel in distress, which is a little annoying, too, because you're like, man, she could do so much better. But she's just going along with the job that she has. And, you know, that's good for her. But I just felt like with the writing, once again, 1990, of course, it's just what you see, what Frances McDormand becomes. And you're like, oh, man, like she totally could have done this role a little differently and would have made the movie a little bit more interesting. Not her fault, more the writer, which is Sam Raimi, by the way. So there is that. But at the same time, Sam Raimi is definitely trying to recapture an old vibe, because, and that's kind of the point of this theme too, is that all these movies seem to be going backwards. Dick Tracy was a old comic strip that's very classic and very 30s. And then you've got The Shadow, which is a movie version of an old radio serialization that used to be on. And considering that Sam Raimi wanted to do The Shadow and couldn't, so made this movie, you can see that the influence, there is a lot of going backwards, the vibes, the like I was talking about before, the overacting and stuff like that. So there's just some of this. And so having a damsel in distress also kind of makes sense for that type of formula. Although I would say that, man, would I have loved this movie even more if you would have updated the formula? You can still call back while also updating and making her character more interesting. I think that that would have been a great way to do it and probably would have increased my score. But I digress. So Liam Neeson's scientist character, his girlfriend, Frances McDormand, works as like an assistant or a lawyer who is working for this big business mogul who is in league with this criminal organization. And she basically finds evidence of the corruption in a memo and confronts the guy about it. And the guy is basically like, hey, don't worry about it. I got it covered. You don't want it. You just act like you didn't even see it. Just leave it right here. Go to the bathroom. I'll take care of it. And she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't even have the memo here at the house. And so basically she has the memo at the science facility, which is also the place where Liam Neeson's character lives. And so these criminals come and try to get the memo. And in doing so, they kill Liam Neeson and his assistant. But Liam Neeson doesn't die, but they think that he dies because they basically dump him in a big vat of acid that he has in the lab. And he gets taken into the hospital as like a John Doe after his lab explodes. Everyone thinks that he's dead. They even have a funeral for him. Frances McDormand thinks that he's dead. So he's basically which is like a classic story. I was trying to think of examples of this. The only movie I could think of, which is also based off of a comic, is Spawn, where the character dies and comes back and he's kind of watching his loved ones from afar and has like a lot of like sadness because of that and loneliness. It's the same kind of vibe in this movie. Liam Neeson, dark man now, who was taken to the hospital, and he's like a John Doe because no one can identify him because he's so burned up. They put this like experimental chemical in him that allows him to basically not feel anything and gives him super strength, but also it stops him from basically dying from the burns. But it also creates like psychosis, madness, anger issues, loneliness, and feelings of alienation and isolation. And so this is where his kind of dark superpowers come from. He immediately breaks out of the hospital because, of course, he does. He has like super strength. And then he goes and finds this abandoned industrial factory area where he creates a new lab. And it's very much like the Batcave, but it's his like laboratory. And that's where he goes to do his experiments because he's trying to fix himself. Now that he's a burn victim, it's very, like I said, it's very convenient that he was also a skin scientist. And so now he's continuing his research and he's trying to get these skin cells to stabilize so that whenever he can basically graft skin onto himself so that he can make himself look good, like okay. But the problem is that he actually successfully was able to create like hands to put on himself, like basically like skin gloves. And then he also was able to even create a digital recreation of his face and put it on, but it can only last for like 98 minutes or 99 minutes or 100 minutes, something like that. And so he'll put on his face and interact with the world again, but only for like 100 minutes. And then he's got to go because it starts to fall apart. The cells break down and it looks like it's melting. And what's interesting about that is that now his superpower is he does have a little bit of, you know, super strength, and he doesn't like really hurt like other people. He doesn't really feel pain. He only feels emotional pain, which there is a lot of that, a lot of sobbing and crying. And Liam Neeson's acting is not great. It's really bad, but I think that it's more of the direction, honestly. I think it's intentional. There, like I said, the movie is very camp, and if you know Sam Raimi, that's not super out of the realm of what his kind of acting direction is. Evil Dead 2, for example, was super overdramatic, and it's great. Like, that movie is great for that. And this one, I think if you can kind of accept that, maybe you can enjoy it. It didn't come off as well for me in this movie as it did in Evil Dead. But anyway, so there's a, like I said, there's a lot of melodramatic. He's got emotional damage, but his actual superpowers is that he can like push, you know, he's super strength and he doesn't get hurt. But also he's got his scientific ability, which is basically to capture the likeness of the people that he's trying to take down within the criminal organization and be able to mask himself as one of them. So he can masquerade as the crime boss or as the lackey, however he wants to do that. But he's got 100 minutes in order to do it. So there's some like tension that gets built up with that. And you know what's so interesting, and to give this movie a little bit of credit, and it's one of the reasons why this is a 6.5 out of 10 and not like a 6 out of 10, is that there is some precedence here that Sam Raimi is setting, because I mean, it's pretty obvious when you watch this movie that it is an incredible influence on Mission Impossible, which has that exact technology that they use for pretty much the same effect, where they graft someone else's skin to make a mask and then masquerade as that person in order to infiltrate, you know, a high-level security area. It's the same concept that's being used in Darkman, which is 6 years before Mission Impossible. So, you know, you got to give credit where credit's due. There's some precedence there. And Sam Raimi did write this. He had two other writers with him, but it was very much a creation of his own. It's not like he was getting it from some other source material. So you got to give him credit on that. But yeah, so the movie plays out basically like any other revenge superhero masquerade. Eventually, there's the big fight with the big bad. You got the big crime boss who is kind of like the lieutenant, that classic action movie. Like, he's like the side boss that you have to beat before you can actually beat the real boss. The real boss is that real estate mogul, and they have this big culminating fight scene in an unfinished skyscraper, which is like, once again, these callbacks to the old like 20s and 30s like Art Deco when they're first creating New York, and you see all those pictures of guys walking around on the I-beams on these skyscrapers. The bad guy even specifically references that when he's up there saying, I miss these old days when we used to be able to do that without harnesses or anything, like the danger. But it's very much calling back to those olden times, Art Deco 30s and 40s kind of thing. And so the movie plays out okay. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's very familiar notes that most people are familiar with. And the difference is that you've got Sam Raimi's weird editing. That's one thing that kind of elevates the movie a little bit. Once again, giving it a 6.5 instead of maybe a 6 or a 5.5, because it's not completely run-of-the-mill, because you've got this, for example, like I said before, the Dark Man will sometimes have fits of rage that are kind of out of his control because of that medical experimentation that was done on him. There's side effects, and part of it is that he has this uncontrollable rage that comes out. And whenever that hits him, there's like these wild special effects that are going. And it's like that those fun, like more practical special effects. It's not CGI. It's like actual art, like cartoons on the screen edited in, like early forms of computer special effects before you got to CGI. But they're done in a way that's really fun to watch and I think very creative. I do miss that kind of stuff. There's a lot of green screen actually in the movie in different spots, and it's a lot more obvious back in those days than it is now. Actually, that's not even true. Sometimes it's very obvious in movies today, but like, there's definitely a lot of scenes where you can tell that there's, like, very obvious green screen going on. There's a crazy scene where Dark Man is hanging from a helicopter. It's very goofy. That scene is, like, straight up slapstick, which is really funny to me because, like I said, the movie's very camp, but at the same time, it's very melodramatic and over the top. And it's, like, I wasn't necessarily, like, that slapstick moment was really the only moment in the movie during that scene with the helicopter where there was, like, overtly slapstick comedy. So I thought that was a weird tonal shift. Even though the movie was silly and campy in a lot of ways, it was campy in a way that was seeming almost self-serious, whereas that scene was like kind of throwing that out a little bit and just being like, whoa, I'm almost gonna hit this car, you know. It just, that was so, or there's literally a part where he is running on top of a semi truck while he's still holding on to the rope that he's attached to from the helicopter, and his feet do like a Wile E. Coyote, like, across the top of the semi truck. And I'm like, okay, like, I get it. There's silliness in this movie, but that's a little, I don't know. Like I said, I just don't feel like the tones really like matched up the way that I wanted them to. So there's really unique editing. There's some cool scenes. Like, there's definitely some of that classic Sam Raimi shots, like where he shoots a projectile and you follow the projectile on Evil Dead. It was an eyeball, and this one it's like a rivet gun that the bad guy is shooting at the end of the movie. That was also annoying. The guy was shooting a rivet gun at Darkman and was missing him at point blank range like multiple times. Like, once or twice it's okay, but when you've done it like 10 times in this scene where you're just shooting rapidly at someone who's right in front of you and missing just blatantly, like, it gets a little, like, okay, you can just suspend your disbelief for a little bit, but it was a little overkill. Once again, there's obviously some things I can complain about. There are some things that I like, and I think that there's precedence here that really needs to be taken account of, like I was talking about before, not just with the Mission Impossible thing, but in some ways, and you could argue maybe Tim Burton's doing this a year before, but in other ways, because the tone of the movie is a little different and the structure of the movie is a little bit more of the origin stories that we're used to nowadays, I think that there is a precedence here where Darkman is really setting up comic book movies of the 2000s and 2010s in particular. And the fact that he would later become the person that really solidified that whole format in the 2000s with Spider-Man 1 and 2, and then we don't really talk about 3. But the fact that he directed the Spider-Man trilogy later definitely lends to the fact that this is kind of like a training ground for him to do that later on. And therefore, I think this does lay a lot of the groundwork for the movies that are genuinely very good, like Iron Man from 2006 or 7, and that started the entire MCU. I mean, those origin stories have a lot to think from this movie. So as much as I thought that it was a little bland and I really wanted a little bit more, I thought that there was a lot of elements in here that were fun. The editing was really cool, and I did appreciate the camp to an extent. I just think that they could have given me just a couple of more unique things. I wanted Frances McDormand's character to be more interesting, and the bad guys were super just like one note. And that's just, I mean, that's somewhat to be expected, but if it would have been, if they would have been more complex, then I would have liked the movie a lot more. Liam Neeson's acting was horrible as well. So 6.5 out of 10, I think, is more than fair. I could even argue myself down to 6, but I think if you put this precedence in there, the fact that Mission Impossible 100% ripped off of this movie. And I think that a lot of people actually really enjoyed this movie. I've read a lot of reviews, and a lot of people seem to come to bat for this movie. So I think for the time, it may have actually been more enjoyable than it is now. Like I said before, that 2024 hindsight, after, you know, all the Marvel fatigue and stuff like that that hits so many origin movies, so many blah, 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 you kind of watch this movie and you can't help but have a little bit of been there, done that itis. So if I was to kind of rip that away and watch this with fresher eyes, maybe I would have enjoyed it more. So 6.5 out of 10, not too bad. I apologize for ranting for 8 minutes about Sam Raimi and a movie that wasn't even this movie. But I think it was important because this is just a director that means a lot to me. And even though I didn't love this movie, it doesn't mean that he doesn't make interesting films. And his style in particular is very cool. even if the movie itself isn't that great, which is really funny, actually. And now, of course, he's a very competent producer. He's produced a lot of movies that I really enjoyed, even the remake of Evil Dead 2013 and the Evil Dead Rise that came out, last year. And both of those movies are great. Evil Dead, the remake, the 2013 remake, is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. It's probably top five, at least, if not top three. So his producing style is really good. He's produced a lot of good movies. And while Multiverse of Madness, the Doctor Strange movie, wasn't like a perfect movie, I'd give that probably a 7 out of 10 or a 7.5. It still had a lot of that Sam Raimi goodness in it that I appreciate. So, and a lot of fun little Easter eggs. He's very much an Easter egg type director. For example, Bruce Campbell was in every single one of his movies, the guy who plays Ash from Evil Dead. And even in this movie, at the very end, Bruce Campbell makes a little cameo in the last shot of the movie. And it's just, I just love that kind of stuff. Directors that really reward their cult following and nod to their previous movies in fun little quirky ways and kind of create their own little lore in a way. Not lore, but maybe like cultural personality in their style. I mean, Sam Raimi himself doesn't like, he's not like on screen all the time, but through his movies, he does a lot of winks and nods that I really appreciate. But that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to get into Dick Tracy, and it came out in the same year as this movie. So obviously, the fedora and trench coat was big during this time, I'm telling you. Anyway, I hope everybody has a good week this week, and I will see you next Friday.